I'm Harry Wallop, and this is Going Bananas.
Oh, look at that. That's a mango from Pakistan. And these beautiful little gold ones, Gog de Magog. I don't know whether, is that a plum? Maybe that's a passion fruit. I'm not sure, but it's very beautiful.
My name's Harry Wallop, and I'm a British journalist with a confession to make. I have an unusual hobby. I collect fruit stickers. I know, cool, huh? I'm just flicking through my album.
There's a Del Monte from Spain, Marlene, which is from the north of Italy, Sutero. They're definitely
top. It's a hobby that may not make me many friends, but these little adverts for faraway fruit producers remind me of the journey that each orange, lemon, apple or pear has made to get to the fruit bowl on my kitchen table.
Harry Smith, the blue whale from France. There's a cox there, a pardo from España, conference pears from Holland.
And there's one fruit that particularly fascinates me.
Chiquita from Panama, and there's fair trade from the Dominican Republic.
It's yellow, bendy, and particularly delicious. What makes the banana stand out is that while you see plenty of stickers for lots of varieties of other fruits, the banana stickers only represent one variety. Though there are more than 1,000 different types of bananas, astonishingly, pretty much only one gets exported. It's called the Cavendish. But I have some devastating news. The days of this beloved banana may be numbered. The Cavendish is being ravaged by a killer fungus. It's called Tropical Race 4, TR4 for short, also known as Fusarium wilt, and it travels at lightning speed.
Okay, so it's a fungus, and it lives in the soil, and the spores find banana roots, they get inside the plant, they grow, and they block up what we call the xylem vessels, which is the way that the plant breathes, and that effectively causes the plant to wilt and die.
That's Dan Beber, an associate professor of ecology from the University of Exeter in the UK. He's a world expert on bananas and has been studying the spread of TR4.
This disease came probably from somewhere in Southeast Asia, probably Papua New Guinea or Indonesia, and it's been steadily spreading around the world. It reached mainland Southeast Asia in the 90s and has steadily moved westwards and came to Colombia probably in 2018 or so.
The arrival of the TR4 fungus prompted Colombia to declare a state of emergency. That's unsurprising for a country where more than 100,000 jobs are linked to bananas. TR4 has arrived in two of Colombia's major banana-producing regions, and there are fears that it will spread still further. Dr. Eliana Torres Bedoya is a microbiologist from Colombia who's been studying the effects of TR4. She spent some time on plantations over there for the programme. So first of all, tell me, what did you discover in your time there? How serious an issue is it?
The problem is really serious. Hundreds of hectares have been eradicated and some farms have been closed. This has led to a very difficult economic situation for the communities that rely on bananas for their livelihoods.
Why does TR4 travel so fast?
Okay, TR4 spreads so fast because it's what we call a soil-borne pathogen. That means that for this part of its life cycle, it survives in the soil.
So to stop this contamination that's causing so much damage, what are the measures they've introduced in Colombia?
So the first thing was avoiding vehicles, for example, to enter into banana plantations to drop people or tools or whatever. The wheels are disinfected of those vehicles, even if they are not entering. Workers, they have to change their clothes, clean their boots.
There's quite strict procedures.
Yeah. And these procedures are evaluated by the National Plant Protection Organization. So if a farm does not apply this, the farm can be closed. This is a disinfection point on the way into one of the banana plantations in the province of Magdalena. My guide was Álvaro Martínez from the Banana Producers Association, Augura. He told us that each vehicle was hosed down, flushing the mud of the car from around the wheels. The muddy water was then treated with chemicals to disinfect it and kept in storage for a year so it could be monitored for the presence of the fungus. I met someone washing the vehicles who was called Edilberto Villafañe. He has seen firsthand the devastation caused by the fungus.
I was working in La Ribera when the fusarium came and all of us lost our jobs. I was about to work in a banana plantation, but then I felt the call to work here because I didn't want the fungus to arrive here and I saw the damage it did. No one wants the fungus to arrive here. I'm doing all I can so it never comes.
That fear of the fungus is echoed by banana growers like Alfonso Castillo.
Pero cuando llegó a Colombia.
So when the fusarium came to Colombia, it first arrived in the La Guajira region. It was really scary because I have a small company and I get by on what I have. I give my kids a good quality of life and education with the little I get from my work. So imagine if you're told it's all at risk. It's a lot to take in. The fear is really, really big, so it's really scary. The challenge of thinking what I'm going to do is too much. I can live with other banana viruses, but I can't live with fusarium wilt. What we've got to do now is try to delay its arrival. Bananas have always been our lives. It's difficult to imagine what we'll do if we couldn't grow bananas.
Eliana, I understand there are some actual abandoned villages because they've been so badly affected. What are they like?
Well, some people call them the ghost towns because the people that used to live there left the towns. Because now the banana plantation's not there and they had to get some other jobs, some in other banana plantations.
Okay, but all the facilities, are the shops closed? Is there anything going on in these towns?
Most of them are closed, yes. When I visited one of those ghost towns, I met Edubianis Mendoza.
Bueno, la principal fuente de empleo que tenemos son las bananeras.
The main source of work was the banana factories. It's hard to find another job. When the banana producers arrived, lots of people came from outside. People moved here and the village grew incredibly. There were three or four families squeezed into some of the houses. The shops and the businesses made twice the usual amount. And even the school was hugely oversubscribed. But then we had the problem with the bananas and the disease arrived. Now, only five houses on the street are inhabited.
The devastation of communities has led to a desperate plea. Here's Elena Bornacelli from the Banana Producers Association, Augura.
Confío en que la ciencia nos ayude a avanzar.
I trust that the science will come and help us. In these difficult times, the banana producers will follow all the biosecurity protocols to try to buy us time. Either the researchers can then carry on their work and eventually develop a banana plant that is resistant, or we find a way to coexist with the disease. But as we have seen from other countries, and especially in Asia, it is impossible to live with this catastrophic disease. So, realistically, there's no alternative. We just need to buy time, and we believe that the science will come and help us.
So, Harry, the hope from Colombia is that science will find a way to defeat TR4.
Eliana, thank you very much indeed. There are many techniques being tried to stop the spread of the fungus. If you prefer a more natural method, then in China, they've noticed that planting a specific type of leek around the banana plants can halt the disease. In the Netherlands, they are crossbreeding strains of the Cavendish in the hope of finding a more resistant variety. While in Australia, scientists have developed a genetically modified Cavendish banana that could be resistant to TR4. But releasing genetically modified crops for human consumption still remains controversial in many countries. And then there is Austria, where nuclear science is being deployed. There they hope to create a disease-resistant strain of the Cavendish banana by blasting it with radiation. It's a tried and tested technique called mutagenesis, and I just had to take a look. So I've travelled about an hour outside of Vienna and I've come to quite a rural bit of Austria. I can even see snow on the Alps in the distance and I'm on a kind of light industrial estate. It in fact is some of the buildings of the International Atomic Energy Agency and I can see their slogan ahead of me saying Atoms for Peace. And you may think this is a very strange place to investigate how they're going to save the banana and what nuclear scientists have to do with fungus in the soil. But here, they're doing groundbreaking work that is crucial to agriculture. We are inside the laboratories, walking down long corridors with lots of warning signs, including that kind of very alarming kind of nuclear X-ray warning sign. Danger.
I'm Pooja Bhatnagar Mathur. I'm the laboratory head for Plant Breeding and Genetics Laboratory of the Joint FAO-IAEA Centre here in Cybersdorf, Lower Austria.
Oh, this is very satisfyingly laboratory. There's men in white coats, literally men in white coats. There's lots of beakers. And now we just come into a room here. It's very warm. And there's these trays that are moving, being sort of gently shuffled on a mechanical device. And I can see, oh, I don't know, I'm guessing something like, 100 different little beakers, all with tin foil on the top. And they've got plants inside. Pooja, what are the plants?
This is a shaker.
A shaker.
And what you see here in these flasks are banana plantlets growing in liquid media. These cultures are irradiated using nuclear-based mutagenesis methods. Like in this case, we use either X-rays or gamma rays in low dosage, since these are very fragile plants. We are just trying to accelerate the process of mutagenesis, which is otherwise a natural process, and picking out the ones that shows us resistance towards the TR4. This is our pathology lab. And this is where we kind of keep our cultures. We grow our cultures, the pathogen culture, for evaluating our mutants that we generate. In this instance, it's banana. This is an inoculation for TR4 that we are preparing.
It's just kind of amazing to see that that is the fungus that is causing all the problems, and it's located in a little beaker in front of me. All right, let's close the incubator. This is the documentary from the BBC World Service. I've been brought into what's called the irradiator room, which is sparklingly sterile. And I've had to put on what's called a dosimeter to check that I'm not going to get dangerous levels of radiation. And there's a little monitor here. So what happens in this room?
So we irradiate these in vitro plants in small tubes.
What has nuclear science got to do with plant breeding?
What we are doing here is we are subjecting the biological material, the crops, the seeds, the in vitro plants that you saw in the lab, subjecting them to this irradiation. We are able to provide the desired dosage to these plant cells for their DNA to break and let the DNA repair system of the plant to work on its own and create those mutations that we are looking for.
Sorry to sound unscientific here, but you are zapping the plants with X-rays or gamma rays. It's as simple as that.
Yes, you can say that in a simpler, more simplified version, yes.
Now, despite sounding quite space-age, the technique of mutagenesis that Pooja is showing me has actually been around for a century or so. It was first developed in the 1920s, when experiments were conducted on fruit flies using X-rays. Today, the International Atomic Energy Agency is training up scientists from countries affected by the fungus to help them develop their own disease-resistant varieties. So for people who might be slightly wary about the idea that plants' DNA is being altered by radiation, if you're in a supermarket, what might you end up buying that actually comes from a plant that has been irradiated?
I would say it's not new. As you know already, the mutations get introduced by not just physical mutagens like irradiation, but even by solar irradiation or by stress. Or, when you walk out, these small changes are always happening. We are just accelerating the process. So we are just taking it to another level so that we are able to breed for varieties in a much faster pace
You here in this lab are trying to save the Cavendish banana through irradiation. So can we see it actually in action?
Sure.
Oh, wow. So this looks like, dare I say, a machine from the 1950s. This does not look like cutting-edge science. The machine is 2 metres high, about a metre deep. It's a really big bit of kit. It kind of looks like almost as if it were an industrial washing machine you see in laundrettes.
So this is the GammaCell 2020, where we'll be subjecting our banana tissue culture plantlets for irradiation.
You're putting a little tiny banana plant into that kind of chamber.
And now we are locking it, making sure this is secure. We close the door here.
Massive thick metal doors.
Now this is what will be an acute dosage on those banana plants so that they receive the desired dosage that we intended to be subjected to.
So you flip the switch and then the chamber basically disappeared down a shaft into this big machine and it's come straight back up after, what, 5 seconds?
Yeah, and that's it.
It's as simple as that?
Absolutely. And now it just goes back to the lab and we multiply them and then evaluate them for the traits that we are looking for.
Silly question, but if we open up the chamber and we see the banana plant, after presumably just a few seconds of gamma rays, they will look exactly the same.
Absolutely the same.
So our banana plants have been given a dosage of gamma rays, and we are now going to go to a greenhouse to see how the banana plants grow after they've been exposed to this radiation. I'm outside what the IEA call their tropical dome, where they grow coffee and banana plants. But I'm in Austria, and in the background I can clearly see the Alps with snow on. So it seems slightly weird that we could get tropical plants, but let's have a look. Ah. Ooh! Steamy! Steamy, steamy. I've come in out of the biting wind of the Alps into a tropical greenhouse, and my glasses have steamed up terribly, and I've been hit by a wall of humid heat and lots of very verdant young plants. Are these bananas?
Yes, these are banana. Yeah, we are working with banana. You know that banana is one of the most important crop in the world, and 400 million people and 135 countries are producing banana.
Now, inside that sweltering greenhouse, I discovered fully grown versions of the plant tissue that had been zapped. The story of the Cavendish has echoes of an earlier variety called the Gros Michel, or the Big Mike. At the end of the 19th century, it was the dominant banana around the world, when it started to be suddenly wiped out by the TR1 fungus. Back then, the now threatened Cavendish strain took over because it was resistant to that fungus. Could history be about to repeat itself? Anyway, back to the greenhouse. My guide was plant breeder and geneticist Fatma Sarsu. These banana plants, they're in, you know, just plastic pots I might find in my own garden. These banana plants are going to be sent out to maybe Colombia to be tested to see if they are resistant.
Yes, we have some projects. We are working with the many member states, including Colombia as well. China has already developed tropical race for resistant variety. Name is Junjiao. Junjiao number 4. Now we are trying to expand this success with the other countries, including Colombia, Mozambique, and Brazil.
Is Junjiao number 4 a Cavendish banana?
Yes, this is a Cavendish variety.
Okay, so why aren't I eating the Junjiao number 4 Cavendish banana when I go into a supermarket?
This is Chinese variety. If you go to China, you can eat this.
But it's not being exported.
That is country's decision, you know, with bilateral agreements. Through that agreement, any country can reach out to China to have this access to this variety.
But there are some people who worry that, for instance, my children, who have grown up with bananas, their children will never know it. The banana could be wiped out. I'm just wondering how hopeful or worried you are about the future of the banana.
Yeah, I have same question for you. Do you imagine a world without banana? I cannot imagine. You know, this is, as you said, you know, most treated fruit in the world. However, as a consumer, I don't want to live without banana. This is, you know, will be very pity for us. And I don't believe that we will live like that. Science and technology has always solution. We will find innovative solutions for sustainable banana production.
Pooja, how much pressure do you feel to come up with an answer?
I would be honest with you, there is a lot of pressure because everyone is desperately looking for this resistance against TR4. And so we are no different. And so there's always a pressure. And we see member states really concerned about the rampant spread of TR4 pathogen, especially in Latin America and South America. And so we want to make sure this doesn't happen to the rest of continents, especially in Africa. And so, yes, we do want to see a solution in at least possible time.
I'm back in a London studio now and feeling much better informed about bananas. But I'm also thinking about the worst case scenario. There are lots of threats to the Cavendish, not just climate change, but another disease called Black Zigotoka too. So what if it is curtains for the Cavendish? Then what next? Well, my producer Robin has brought with him an intriguing box. What's in here, Robin?
Well, as you mentioned, Harry, there are more than 1,000 varieties of banana in the world. So these are some of the alternatives. If the Cavendish goes, what could you try instead? I've brought you some cooking bananas.
Okay.
You'll have seen these before. The big, long, green, unripe ones. There are plantains.
Yeah, obviously very, very common in Africa. And these beautiful little small ones, which I've had on holiday in India, but they just don't get exported. Let's just try one, see what it tastes like.
Okay.
Okay. Well, it's... Yeah, I'm not sure that's ripe. And it's not very sweet. Slightly apple-y. And the texture, yeah, a bit chalky.
Now, the one you've just picked up is a red banana.
Now, these I have seen in specialist greengrocers, but again, they're just not exported in any commercial quantities.
They're meant to be softer, sweeter than Cavendish, with a slightly tangy raspberry flavour. They're found in East Africa, Asia and South America. A red banana. Again, a trial to get into.
Yeah, real. I'm having to make a right old mess here. But it's soft, in that, unlike the little dinky small one that was basically the size of a big thumb. This is smaller than a standard banana. It is red. It's kind of russet, rusty red. Let's have a try. I'm not getting raspberry, but that's a nice banana.
Is it sweet?
It's sweet. Not as sweet as a Cavendish. The problem is it's completely ripe on the inside. It was an absolute nightmare to peel. It's just not a practical, on-the-go fruit. One of the secrets to banana success, it's the ultimate snack food. You know, it's perfect in lunchboxes. People eat it walking down the street. You can't eat a red banana down the street because you need a knife to get into it. It's a perfectly tasty banana. I just don't think it's as good as the Cavendish. I mean, the Cavendish has become the world's number one banana because it is a wonderful fruit. And if we're going to get rid of the Cavendish and replace it with something else, such as the red banana, then the entire industry that's being geared around the Cavendish is going to have to change. The boxes, the ships, the factories, the warehouses, all going to have to change. And that will be a huge shock to a massive global industry.
You've been listening to The Documentary from the BBC World Service.